All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So we're continuing this week in Kapitel Mem Hei, chapter 45 in Tehillim. So remember, again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit, we spoke about last week just the opening pasuk of this kapitel, L'Natzeach Al Shoshanim Livnei Korach Maskil Shir Yedidos, and we spent the majority of our time last week speaking specifically about the Shoshanim. Who are the Shoshanim? Who are the roses? Baruch Hashem Baruch Hu, compare us to roses. The Shir Yedidos, the love song, the different understandings as to who exactly is composing this kapitel and for whom, who is the subject. So today we're going to focus exclusively on pasuk beis, second verse in this kapitel. So David HaMelech writes again, this is in number one, Rachash Libi, my heart is astir, Dover Tov, with something good. Omer Ani, I say, Ma'asai Lemelech, I say, my works are for a king. Lishoni 8, my tongue is like a pen, like a quill. Sofer Mahir, I should say, Lishoni 8, Sofer Mahir, my tongue is a pen of an expert scribe. So remember, we spoke already about last week the idea that this kapitel is dramatically different than anything we've learned until now, for the simple reason that there's no overtone of sadness, of depression, of persecution. This is a very upbeat kapitel, very optimistic, very happy, very songful, joyous kapitel. So again, here David HaMelech is saying, Rachash Libi Davar Tov, my heart is stirring with a good thing, which is an incredible contrast. Because in the previous kapitel, David HaMelech often spoke about the fact that his heart was astir as well, but it is usually astir with difficulty, with challenges, with sadness, with tragedy. Here, my heart is astir, which means, again, there are emotions that are churning within me, but the emotions that are churning are good. Omer Ani, again, just reading the pasuk once more, I say, Ma'asai Lemelech Lishoni 8, Sofer Mahir, my works, that which I do, are good for the king, and again, my tongue is the pen of an expert scribe. So let's analyze this a little bit. So I want to share with you today, in Meretz Hashem, time permitting, two different approaches. So there's a sefer called Imros Tehoros. If you look at number two, I'll tell you, this is actually, I found this sefer by accident. I unfortunately had to go to a Levaya in Borough Park, and I came back after the Levaya was over, and I was triple parked in, with, of course, no way to get out. So, all right, I went to Eichler's, and I found this particular sefer, tried to use. So you're the beneficiary of me being triple parked for 50 minutes in Borough Park. In any event, so take a look. So it's a wonderful opportunity to work on your Avas Yisrael. So take a look. So this is actually quite beautiful. So in the Sefer Imros Tehoros, he writes the following. Omer Ani, I say, Yitachin im Amram Zal, Vidui Maisre Bechal Lashon, Vinu Om Rabbasinu Zal, Be'er Heitev, Beshivim Lashon, V'zehaya Apine. So I'm just going to read a few lines, then we'll explain it. He says, Umihirus Godol Lichtov HaTorah B'yom Echad Bechal Lashonos. So first of all, what the Imros Tehoros is making reference to over here is the following. If you turn the page for a moment, just to source number three. So the Torah says, this is in the beginning of Sefer Dvarim. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Be'iver HaYarden, Torah says, Be'iver HaYarden Be'eretz Moav, Hoyil Moshe, Be'er Es HaTorah HaZos Leimor. So remember, Moshe Rabbeinu spends his last weeks in the Transjordanian lands that ironically will in the future become part of Eretz Yisrael. So, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted so badly to go into Eretz Yisrael. On a certain level, he did. He entered into the lands that would become the future tribal areas of the 2.5 tribes that would ultimately be annexed to Eretz Yisrael. The only problem is they only become part of Eretz Yisrael after Eretz Yisrael proper is conquered and divided. Once Eretz Yisrael proper is conquered and divided, then the Transjordanian lands become part of Eretz Yisrael as well. So Moshe Rabbeinu is in the Transjordanian lands, looking longingly into the land, but knowing that he's not going to go in. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu do with his final days, his final weeks, his final months? Hoyo Moshe, Be'er Es HaTorah HaZos Leimor. Moshe Rabbeinu begins to explain the Torah. He begins to explain the Torah. Now, the simple pshat, the simple understanding of this pasuk, where does Moshe Rabbeinu begins to explain the Torah? So, you know, most of the Mefarshim understand the following. It says, when Moshe Rabbeinu gave Klal Yisrael the Torah, and he gave them all the halachos. Remember, again, Moshe Rabbeinu gave them everything at Har Sinai. That's why Parshas Mishpatim follows on the heels of, bless you, follows on the heels of Parshas Yisrael. That just like the Aseret Dibros, the Ten Commandments were given at Sinai, so too all of the other laws of Torah were given at Har Sinai as well. But then it's seven others point out, here's the problem. The problem is because the people were on the move, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have the opportunity to really give them the laws in a deep, comprehensive fashion. So what he gave them essentially was a series of do's and don'ts. Do this, don't do this, without really giving them the intellectual underpinnings. Again, not because he didn't want to, not because they couldn't handle it, but it was the nature of their journey. They're constantly on the move. You know, one thing that a person doesn't have when they're not settled is Yishav Hadas. You don't have mental tranquility. When you're on the road, you're traveling, you're here or there, there's no mental tranquility. Without mental tranquility, it's hard to take time to understand the deeper meaning of things. For the first time, Klal Yisrael is settled. Again, not settled forever, but settled for now in the Transjordanian lands. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu uses this as an opportunity to explain the tenets of Torah to the people. But Rashi makes a very enigmatic statement. Rashi number 4 writes, Beres HaTorah, B'shivim lashon pirshahem. Moshe Rabbeinu translates the Torah for Klal Yisrael, explains it in 70 languages. And by the way, I'm sorry?
Why did they need that?
I wouldn't have a job if you knew the answer to that, right? That's why I'm here. So we're gonna do that. Excellent. So we're going to explain it in just a moment. So remember again, in addition to Moshe Rabbeinu explaining it, Moshe Rabbeinu also wrote it on the rocks. Remember when Klal Yisrael entered into Eretz Yisrael, they set up a series of large stones. And on those stones was written the Torah. The idea was that when you enter into Eretz Yisrael, you should see that this is a land that is governed by the laws of the Torah. Not just from a legalistic perspective, but from a spiritual perspective as well. And so too Rashi there explains that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah in 70 languages. So here we have Moshe writing the Torah in 70 languages, but for our purposes today, more importantly, explaining to Klal Yisrael the Torah in 70 languages. Now go back to number 2 for just a moment. So what happens? He writes over there, Moshe Rabbeinu writes, third line, V'zehaya pines. So the fact, first of all, that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to write the Torah in all 70 languages on one stone. So, yes. Good. Hold on to that for just a moment. Good. Hold on. So listen to this. He says, "Umihirus gadol lichtov haTorah biyom echad b'chol lishonos." So obviously, first of all, this is miraculous. It was miraculous that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Torah in all 70 languages on stones. It was miraculous that he taught them the entire Torah in 70 languages. And look what he writes: "Vizel kavonas hakosuf." Says the Sefer Imos Toros. This is what David HaMelech is alluding to in this pasuk. Listen to this. Omer ani. David HaMelech said, Ma'asai lemelech. Literally, my works are for a king. My actions are for the king. What does that refer to? Rotz lomar shani omer u'misaper ma'asai lifnei melech malchei hamelachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I tell over my actions and my deeds before God, dahainu vidui meiser sha'adam omer shekayim amitzos kashen etzdabu. We're just skipping a little bit. Uke'amram zal adam omer shvacho ayin shampei rishrashi azai lishoni hu ke'eit sofer mahir. Dahainu zehayom aso Hashem al pianes lichtov haTorah b'chol lashon biyom echad. So the Imre Sora says something very strange. He says this pasuk is a reference to the miracle that Moshe Rabbeinu taught Klal Yisrael the Torah in all 70 languages. So he says, "Rachash libi davar tov." What's the amazing thing that I want to speak about to you, God? Ma'asi lemelech lishoni eight sofer mahir. My tongue is like an expert scribe scroll. Just like the scribe is able to write very quickly, so too Moshe Rabbeinu was able to give over the entire Torah in 70 languages to the entire people in one day, very quickly. Wow. Incredible. Wonderful. Except, what does it have to do with anything? Right? Meaning, so what? So remember, we have a number of questions. First of all, the fundamental question as to why is Moshe Rabbeinu translating the Torah into 70 languages? Why is he giving over to Klal Yisrael? Meaning, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah in 70 languages, that's not such a question. Now we understand why. Because if the point of the inscription of the Torah on the stones was to show that the land of Israel is governed by the energy of the Torah, you want that concept concept to be known to all of the nations of the world. So the fact that that would have been written in 70 languages, I understand. It's an important idea. Eretz Yisrael is not a land like other lands. Torah is the, for lack of a better term, the spiritual battery for all of creation. Without Torah, there is no universe. There's nothing. But Eretz Yisrael has a unique relationship with Torah. There is no Eretz Yisrael. The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is fundamentally and inherently tethered to Klal Yisrael's connection to Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu wants to put the nations of the world on notice. When you enter into this land is different than anywhere else you came from. And he needs them to know that. How do he make sure they know it? By writing it in all 70 languages. But why does he have to give over Torah to Klal Yisrael in 70 languages? Remember again, we were not a multi-tongued people, as was mentioned before. Remember, the nation that's here is not the nation that left Egypt. Because remember, at the end of the day, this is at the end of the 40 years, which means the majority of people who left Egypt have already died in the desert. But again, that doesn't change the fact that people were not speaking multiple tongues or multiple languages. What did they speak? Maybe they spoke some Egyptian from what they learned from their parents. Although remember, Chazal told us that one of the things that Klal Yisrael did not change in Egypt was the Shonam, their language. So they spoke, we'll assume right now for our purposes, they spoke Lashna Kodesh. They spoke Hebrew. So why the need to translate the entire Torah into 70 languages? And to compound that question, why is King David mentioning that here? So David says, Rachash Libi David, Ribono Shel Olam, my heart is filled with something so, you know what's so amazing? You know what's so amazing, Ribono Shel Olam? My tongue is like the scribe's quick quill, because Moshe Rabbeinu was able to translate the Torah for all kinds of the 70 languages. Okay, so what does it have to do with anything? So take a look at number five. So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditchev says something quite beautiful. The Rebbe asks, we ask the Rebbe's question. He says, if you look, I apologize, there are two size fonts. I always feel bad cutting and pasting words of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditchev. I'm no one to be his editor of the Kiddush HaSlevi. So I put it all on here. The larger font is the one we're going to read. The smaller font is the one that's here for you. When you have a couple of 3 minutes, you can fill in the blank. So look what he writes, the end of the first line. V'lama bi'er kan hatora b'shivim loshen. So the Rebbe asks the fundamental question. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu translating the Torah for Klal Yisrael into 70 languages? Right? Why is this necessary for us? And Rabbi Levi Yitzchak here says something absolutely amazing. He says, Haklal, ki lefamim ksiv batorah, tevas hatargum. So the Rebbe points out that it's interesting to note that sometimes the Torah does employ other languages. For example, kigon yigar sahadusa. Where is yigar sahadusa? Right? By Lavan. Right, so Laban meets up with Yaakov. They essentially make a line of demarcation. No one crosses this line. So the Torah tells us Yaakov called it Gal-Eid. Literally, again, Gal, pile, Eid, testimony. This is the testimonial line that neither of us will cross. And Laban called it Yigar Sadusa. So the Rebbe is saying, why does the Torah have to tell me what Laban called this place? What does it matter to me? All you want to tell me what Yaakov called it? It's called Galeid, fine. But Yagar Sadusa, first of all, Yagar Sadusa is not even Hebrew. Yagar Sadusa is some form of ancient Aramaic. So why does it even have to be included here? He goes on. We find that the Torah includes a number of other languages, which is Kigon, Totafos. Now this is amazing. Totafos is the word that the Torah uses for tefillin. Now the amazing part is that the Mefarshim scratch their heads to the etymological root of totafos. Because totafos does not have a Hebraic etymological root. Where does this word come from? So Rashi says something amazing. Rashi quotes over here, tat bikasvi shtayim, pas ba'afriki shtayim. So apparently the word totafos is a contraction of two foreign dialects. Tat in the Kasvi language is two. Pat, pas, and Afrikan, some African dialect is two. So why is tefillin totafos? Because the tefillin has four sections, four compartments, four parshios. So the word for tefillin is a contraction of two words from foreign dialect. So bizarre. So, as my daughters would say, so random. Right? So random. Right? That was such a random thing to say. So What's the idea over here? So strange. Here, this is tefillin. This is, I mean, obviously one of the most important. There's no such thing as they're all important mitzvos. But here's something that for a Jewish man is a daily part of his avodas Hashem, and the word that the Ribono Shel Olam chooses to use to describe this mitzvah is not Hebrew. It's some contraction of some Kasvi, some African dialect. What's going on over here? He says v'chein. He goes on, he gives us a couple of different examples. Skip down to the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth line down. V'chad tamu. The Rebbe says, I'm going to explain to you what the logic over here is. Ki aloshon shal kol ha'umos hu achiyos min ha'uma. You see, language represents the very lifeline of a nation. That's why, again, we actually discussed this last week when we spoke about the idea why Tehillim doesn't translate well. Even the positive that we're studying today, it just doesn't, you feel like when you read the Hebrew, you feel like you're getting a little bit of emotion, and then you read the English and the emotion is drained from it. Why? Because every language contains the very essence of the nation, the very lifeblood of the nation. Languages contained what we'll call national nuances. The very essence of a nation is contained in its language. He goes on, Lashon HaKodesh, Hu Shel Yisrael Levad. So we're no exception. That's why Lashon HaKodesh is our language. Lashon HaKodesh is our language. And again, and that's like, you know, there's a difference, not now, but for now, but there's a difference between Lashon HaKodesh in Hebrew, right? So modern Hebrew has elements of Lashon HaKodesh, but is not the same as when the Rebbe says Lashon HaKodesh, he's referring to ancient Hebrew, what the Torah writes in. So too, Lashon HaKodesh is the very lifeblood of Klal Yisrael. Ube'emes Yisrael shamu haTorah b'Sinai, rak b'Lashon HaKodesh. Now the reality is, when Klal Yisrael heard the Torah at Sinai, the Ribono Shel Olam, contrary to popular opinions, God doesn't speak in Yiddish. HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and speaks in Lashon HaKodesh. Right? So what happened when they heard the Torah at Har Sinai? Everything was given over Lashon HaKodesh. VeHaKadosh Baruch Hu hamabit mireishes acharis. Now the greatness of God is that the Ribono Shel Olam, even though we live in the present, Ribono Shel Olam is past, present, future, which means that anything God does in the present, by definition, also includes the Ribono Shel Olam's planning for the future. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu is at Har Sinai? He's giving us the Torah, and what does he see? Shera'a sheYisrael tzrichin lihios bagalus. The Ribono Shel Olam knows already at Har Sinai, before we even step foot into Eretz Yisrael, he knows where the story goes. And where does the story lead to? The story leads to galus, to diaspora, to exile. Lazek hasav haTorah, Lashon Shel Shar Umos. Sha'al Yidei Zeh Yihyeh Lahem Achiza B'chiyus Shalahem. Sh'al Lashon B'Torah Kedosha B'chdei She'Yisrael Yuchal Lihyos Lahem Tekuma B'Galus. Says the Rebbe something absolutely amazing. Do you know why the Torah sprinkles in foreign dialects? Because if Torah would just be written in Lashon HaKodesh, you may come to assume that Torah could only be absorbed, spirituality can only be absorbed through a very specific prism. What's the specific prism? Lashon HaKodesh, Eretz Yisrael. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes in and throws in words like Yigar Sahadusa, like Totafos, what that shows is that Torah has an achiza. Torah can be rooted wherever and whenever we are. Take this one step further, then we'll bring it, we'll polish it a little bit more. Take a look at number 6. The Pasuk in Devarim says, V'yahavta asa Hashem Elokecha, b'chol levavecha, u'b'chol nafshecha, u'b'chol ma'odecha. So, Pasuk that we know, but we say it in Kriya Shema, Yushalav HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and ma'odecha, for our purposes, will translate to mean your possessions. Rashi HaKadosh in number 7 says, what does it mean, b'chol levavecha? What does it mean with all of your heart? Rashi says, Shelo yeh lipcha chalok al hamakom. Literally translated, that your heart should not be divided against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, on the most basic level, what Rashi is saying is like this. It is easy to love the Ribono Shel Olam when everything in life goes your way. Right? When life is good, when I'm happy, I have health, I have parnasa, my children is good, my marriage is good, my parents are good, whatever it is, right? When things are going my way, everybody loves the Ribono Shel Olam, when life is going well. V'yahavta as Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavecha, says Rashi HaKadosh, means what? Shelo yehi libcha chaluk al hamakom, b'chol levavecha means what? Even when things are not going my way, right? Even when things are not going my way, the Ribono Shel Olam says, I want you to love me. I want, Kadosh Baruch Hu is asking us, by the way, that even when things might be a little bit rocky, I'm asking you to love me. Obviously, when I'm asking for me, it's because I'm asking you to trust me. I'm asking you to understand that even when things in your life are not going well, even when you're not happy, even when it's not following the plan, I want you to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that I've got your back. I love you. I'm taking care of you. And therefore, don't be a fair weather lover to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but rather love the Ribono Shel Olam no matter what, even when things are good and even when things are not good. Try to give HaKadosh Baruch Hu your love. Try to be there with Him. Try to put your faith in Him, knowing that He's taking care of you even when you don't feel taken care of. But look at number 8. In the Sefer Ish Kodesh, actually I mentioned this in my Parsha Shir, on Wednesday Parsha Shir a couple of weeks ago. So the Ish Kodesh, which was written by the Piazhetzna. So the Piazhetzna Rebbe was an incredible, incredible figure. He was a Hasidic Rebbe, who Piazhetzna is a town in Poland. There was still a Piazhetzna. There are no Jews in Piazhetzna, but there could still go to Piazhetzna in Poland today. So the Rebbe was a great Hasidic leader before the war. During the war, from 1941 to 1943, he was in the Warsaw Ghetto. And every single week, the Rebbe would give a drasha. Every single week when he was able to, he would give a drasha. And after Shabbos, he wrote down the drashos. Towards 1943, it becomes clear that he's not going to get out of the ghetto. He buries the drushas in a canister in the ghetto. The Rebbe dies on the transport to Auschwitz. After the war, somebody who was there with him in the ghetto came and dug up the transcripts, the manuscript. It was literally buried in the ghetto, and they put it together in a sefer called Ish Kodesh. And it's an exceptional, exceptional sefer. And again, it goes from the years from 1941 to 1943. And what's amazing to note is how the Rebbe's tone changes in the drashos as the years go along. So in 1941, even in 1942, the tone is upbeat. We're going to survive. We're going to be okay. In 1943, the tone is still optimistic, but it's a different kind of optimism. It's an optimism about the privilege to dial Kiddush Hashem. There is no longer as much optimism that we're going to survive. There's no longer as much optimism that we're going to get out of here. But it's an optimism that we could control how we leave. We might not be able to control the manner of our death, but we can absolutely control the spirituality we have leading up to this end. So every single drasha itself is just it's a window. It's a window into the greatness of the Jewish soul and into the inconquerable nature of the Jewish soul. So here you can see, this is from Parshas Yisro, and you could even see this drasha was given on January 7th, 1940. And you could see, I apologize, the print is not so great, but you could see, he says, Beb Shabbos Zeh, Ha'isi Bechavei. This Shabbos we were in hiding. This Shabbos, which usually means that there was some kind of action in the ghetto. There was some type of roundup in the ghetto, in which case they weren't able to go ahead and gather publicly to daven. So they were in hiding. So the Rebbe writes over here, again, we're not going to get into this. He gets into much more Parshas Yisro, but skip down to paragraph B, because here he says something absolutely amazing. The Rebbe asks a simple question. He says, why is it that the Torah was given on Har Sinai? Meaning, one would have thought, if I were to ask you to choose the location for Matan Torah, what would you say? Where would you place it? All right. If somebody were to ask me where to give the Torah, I would have said Har Habayis. Har Habayis, what's the question, right? Again, Har Habayis, the Temple Mount, it's not the Temple Mount yet, but it was the place where Akedas Yitzchak took place. It was the place ultimately where for all eternity, even now, there is the greatest Hashras, Hashchina, the greatest manifestation of the Divine Presence. It's the most natural location for Matan Torah. Says the Rebbe, yet, the most important event in Jewish history happened where? Literally, in the middle of nowhere. So much the middle of nowhere. You know, if you want to go to where Rachel Imenu was buried, you can go. The Avos and Imelos are buried, you can go. Beis HaMikdash, you can go. The most important event in Jewish history, the most important event, if you want to go to the place where it occurred, no idea. No idea. Some tour guides like to say they know exactly. No one knows where it is. No one knows exactly where it is. What a strange dynamic. That the most important event, remember, our entire religion is based on Sinaitic mass revelation. The entire authenticity of the Torah is based on the fact that we did not get it from Moshe. We got it from the Ribono Shel Olam. And yet, again, the location of that mass revelation is unknown. So what's going on over here? Sukkoti writes in paragraph base, Aval Kabbalas HaTorah Min Bar Haisam. Because Baruch Hu chose to give the Torah in the middle of the desert. Why? The Avshel Rameis Gam Lahash She'isa B'Sarim V'Sefer HaKadosh Beis Aaron. Al Divi Rashi Shema Yisrael. He quotes our Rashi. Shloye Lipcha Cholok Al HaMakom V'Or B'Kadsho. So he quotes in the Sefer Beis Aaron. Shelo Tomar B'Makom Zeh Efshar La'avodas Hashem O B'Makom HaZeh I Efshar Li Rak B'Chol Makom Tzrichim La'avodas Hashem. The Piagetna says something absolutely amazing. Go back up to number 7 for just a moment, but keep your place in number 8. Rashi says, what does it mean to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of your heart? Shelo yelibcha chalok ala makom. So the way we understood, is makom referred to who? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. My heart should not be divided against God. In other words, that I should love HaKadosh Baruch Hu no matter what He does to me in life. I should find a way to love Him. Find a way to have a relationship no matter what. Says Rabbi, that's not what it means. Or that is what it means. But it also means something else. Shelo yelibcha chalok ala makom means don't let your heart deceive you and tell you that God could only be found in a particular place. Don't let your heart deceive you and tell you that spirituality could only be found in a particular place. V'yahavta as Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavecha means learn to love the Ribono Shel Olam, have a connection with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu no matter where you are. And therefore says the Piagetna, that is dafka why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Torah in the middle of nowhere. Because had God given the Torah in Eretz Yisrael, what would have been the logical conclusion? Logical conclusion? That the only place to have a relationship with God is in Eretz Yisrael. Now again, we all know that Eretz Yisrael has an intensity of spirituality that cannot be found outside of land. There's a uniqueness of Eretz Yisrael that cannot be replicated even in the greatest centers of Torah throughout the world. And there are many Baruch Hashem. That is true. But lest you think that Eretz Yisrael has cornered the market on individual spirituality, unequivocally false. Shelo yehe lipcha chalak ala makom means let your heart not deceive you that you could only be a spiritual holy person if you're in a particular place. Rather, again, what Rashi's telling us, the Piagetna is telling us, is that wherever you are in life, you have the ability to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wherever you are in life, you have the ability to forge that meaningful relationship. And just, by the way, if you take a step back for just a moment, and you think about where the Rebbe is saying this in the midst of literally Gate Salmavis. This is the valley of death. This is the valley of death. Every one of these people who were there for this drush, I guarantee you, lost their families, lost everything. And literally the Piagetna is telling you, I'm telling you, even here in the Warsaw Ghetto, the Ribono Shel Olam is with us. There's no such thing as a Jew saying, well, these are my circumstances, they're really difficult, they're really overwhelming, and therefore it precludes me from having a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wherever I am and whenever I am, there is always the ability to have a relationship. To bring this now back a little bit, so understand that this is what Rabbi Yitzchak Abraditchev was saying as well. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu take the time to translate the Torah into 70 languages when the people, the Jewish people, Klal Yisrael, don't speak any of these languages? For the same reason, says Rabbi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went out of his way to include Yegar Sadusa, to include Tautapos. Why? To teach us that our spirituality is not confined. Our Torah is not confined to any one geographic location. Wherever we are, and I would add in there's one additional piece. It's not just wherever, but it's whenever. No matter what is happening in my life, no matter how overwhelming my circumstances may appear, I always have the ability, if I choose, to create and to foster and to nurture a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's Shelo Yehe Libcha Chalok Ala Makom. Never think that a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, relationship, I often give this speech to young men and women returning from Eretz Yisrael and seminary. Because you know, when you come back, you think like your soul is dead. Mamish, like, yeah, that's it. It's true. It's a big yerida. It's a huge yerida. But it's not a yerida. It's not just simply a decline that's permanent. You pick yourself back up. And I take it, and again, you realize it's not just about geography. It's about life circumstances as well. No matter what is happening in my life, if I choose to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no matter where I am in life, I have that ability. It's not always easy. It's not always easy. It's not always, doesn't always show, fall into my lap. Sometimes I have to work very hard on it. But that possibility and that opportunity is always there. Now bring this full circle. Go back now to number one. Yes? So that was different. That was an organized translation for the sake of the Gentile nations. That's something fundamentally different. And that was done. But Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who choreographed it. It was clear what was being referred to over here as the Septuagint. When King Ptolemy commissioned the 70 others, so Chazal say again, it's actually in Megillas Tainis, the seventh of Teves was a fast day because that's when they translated the Torah into 70 languages. That was done by Ptolemy to exploit the Torah. See, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote this, and again, I don't know what Moshe Rabbeinu did write or didn't write, but it was done to broadcast the beauty of the Torah to the nations. Ptolemy was looking to exploit the Torah and show it's just its idiosyncrasies and its contradictions. That's why it was such a darkness. So we bring this full circle. Go back now up to number one. So remember, what did the Imros Torah say? What does Dalai Lama say? Ribono Shel Olam, Rachash Libi Davar Tov. Oh God, my heart is filled. My heart is filled with something so good. What is it? Omer Ani Ma'asai LeMelech Lishoni Eit Sofer Meir. God, you know what's so good? What's so good is that my tongue is like the expert scribe school that's able to go through. You know what's great? You know what's amazing? That we translated the Torah into 70 languages. So now we understand what David HaMelech is saying. Ribono Shel Olam, you know what the best thing in life is? That no matter what is happening with me, I could have a relationship with you. This is David HaMelech talking. David HaMelech, remember, who went through every single challenge known to man. Whatever challenge you could think of, David HaMelech had it. Whatever difficulty you could think of, David HaMelech had it. Whatever hurdle you could think of, he had it. And yet, David HaMelech is rejoicing in the fact that the Torah was translated into 70 languages. David HaMelech was rejoicing in the fact, Shlo yelipcha chaluk ala makom, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, I am able to connect with you and have a relationship with you no matter what is happening in my life. This gives David HaMelech the ultimate simcha, the ultimate joy. And if you think about it, by the way, David HaMelech, this is why tzaddikim are able to maintain a healthy and a happy disposition no matter what they have. You see, here's the difference. If your happiness is dependent on stuff, so if you need a big house, and if you need a nice car, and if you need expensive things in order to be happy, and again, there's nothing wrong with having a big house and a big car as long as you use it appropriately and use it as a way to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if that's what your happiness depends on, then the truth is, there are going to be points in time when you're not happy. Why? Why? Because when the 2017 model of the car comes out and you're still driving a 2015, I don't have the best. Or if something bigger and better comes out, I'm just never going to be happy. But if my happiness is rooted in my ability to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then here's the amazing part. That's always accessible. That's always accessible. No matter what's happening in my life, that is always there. So David HaMelech is saying, Ribono Shel Olam, I got to tell you something. You know, this lesson of Rachash Libi Davar Tov, you know, sometimes you have something that is so good, such wonderful news, and mamash, like your kishkas are bursting because you just want to go ahead and share it. David HaMelech, can you imagine, just like a little child, right? Tanta, I have something so beautiful to tell you. Kosh Baruch Hu, you're not going to believe what I just discovered. I just realized that I can always be besimcha. Rabbi Nachman writes, mitzvah gadol lios besimcha tamid. Always wonder, you know, understand what Rabbi Nachman said, it's a great mitzvah to be happy all the time. Rabbi Nachman was not referring to sometimes what happens when you're at a red light in Eretz Yisrael, where a bunch of guys jump out of a van, get on top and start dancing, right, to blasting music. That's wonderful. That's good also. That's not what Rabbi Nachman meant. What do you mean, mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid? You know, Rabbi Nachman had many times throughout his life where he was not happy, where he was sad, where he had dealing with difficulty, dies at 39 from tuberculosis. What do you mean happy all the time? So if you understand that your happiness in life is not rooted in what you buy, in what you consume, in what you own, but your real happiness in life comes because I, as an individual, could have a meaningful and beautiful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that relationship is always open and always accessible to me, then you could be besimcha tamid. If your simcha is dependent on stuff, you might be besimcha at times. And usually, as we all know, when simcha is rooted in stuff, that simcha is very fleeting, right? When the new item smell, whatever you want to call it, wears off, it's just like all your other stuff. If that's where your simcha comes from, you'll have moments of simcha, but the simcha will quickly be fleeting and you'll be depressed because you're going to be looking for that high again. But if your simcha in life comes from a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, David HaMelech says, I have amazing news. It's always accessible. It's always accessible. Whenever I want it, it's always there. Again, I want to be clear. It doesn't mean that it's easy to acquire it. And it doesn't mean that it's easy to find it. And it doesn't even mean that it's easy to keep it. The only thing that's easy is it's always open to us. It's always accessible to us. And David HaMelech says, that was the lesson that Moshe Rabbeinu taught us by translating the Torah into 70 languages. That's why, again, he's got nothing better to do in his final weeks than translate the Torah into 70 languages. He's trying to show Klal Yisrael, wherever you are, this is yours. God is yours. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives Torah in the middle of nowhere in order to show us wherever you are, whenever you are, this Torah is yours. No matter what, the opportunity to have a relationship is always there. And that's the meaning of the Imros Tohoros. That's why David HaMelech makes reference over here. Kadosh Baruch Hu, Lishoni Eit Sofer Meir, my tongue is a pen of an expert scribe, referring to Moshe Rabbeinu's translation of the Torah into 70 languages. Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm a king, and I've got a lot of stuff. I've got a lot of stuff. But it's not that stuff that makes me happy. It's my relationship with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that ultimately gives me true and enduring happiness in life. Let's look at one more approach and then we'll stop for today. Take a look at number 9, the Alshich. So the Alshich here says something absolutely amazing as well. The Alshich writes, he says, Rachash libi davar tov, berisha achal ba'amar, kilu ish yisrael mispar meirov chibasa yisparachimo, afilu liyachid sivam, I'm just skipping a little bit. Makir ani ma'alos tovos There's something unique that about the relationship that God has with us that He doesn't share with any other nations. I'm in the third line in number nine, about 7 words in. Vahu echot ki machshava tova mitzarfa lemaisa. The Rebbe Shalom does something amazing with us, which is He counts good thoughts as good deeds. Good thoughts as good deeds. We'll finish in just a moment. His vizel, Rachash libi davar tov, shehi machshava tova, miyad omer, ani kvar ma'aseh heim lemelech. So listen to this. Ki'ilu ma'aseh kvar munach lefanav yisparach. If you take a look just for a moment at number one, for just a second. So here, the way the Alshich understands this pasuk is the following. Rachash libi davar tov, my heart is astir with something good. I want to do something good. Omer ani ma'asai lemelech. I say that as far as God is concerned, it's as if what? Ma'asai lemelech, I did it already. Now I just want to tell you, this is going to be one of the best Gemaras you will ever learn. Take a look at number 10. Look at the Gemara. Says the Gemara Maseches Kiddushin, Daf Mem Amud Daf 40a. So the Gemara says, Machshava Tova Mitzarfa Lemaisa. This is amazing. You know, there are some things in Judaism that we ask ourselves, like, why does this work? And then right after we ask Keshe, we say, be quiet. Who cares why it works? As long as it works, this is good news for us. So the Gemara says that Machshava Tova, if I have a thought, I have a good thought, meaning I want to do something, Sechadosh Baruch Hu treats that thought as action, as if I did it. Now again, I want to be clear. The Gemara doesn't mean that therefore all you have to do in life is think good thoughts, right? And that's it. No. Of course, again, the goal is think good thoughts that lead to good actions. But if for some reason I want to do something and I'm precluded from doing so, that makshava, that thought to do good in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is as meaningful as an act itself. He goes on. V'shene emar, az nidburu yirei Hashem ishor. Ayo v'akshav Hashem v'yishma v'yichtov zeh. Fine, skip down a little bit. Ma'ilucho sheishmo al Rabbi Asi, afilu chashav adam la'asos mitzvah. If a person wanted to do a mitzvah, v'ne'enas v'lo asa, but there were extenuating circumstances that precluded me from carrying out that which I thought to do, Ma'ala alav hakasav ki'ilu asa. HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts it as if I did it. Amazing, amazing Gemara. If I think something good, I want to do something, but I am precluded from doing so for reasons beyond my control, I get credit for the thought as if I did the action itself. But Baruch Hashem, the converse is not true. Machshavara, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the good news is that when it comes to a thought to commit an avera, so I do not get penalized for the thought, right? It's Baruch Hashem. As a person has desire to do an avera, but then does not actually carry through on that desire, meaning desire does not yield concrete action, then a person is not counted as if, it's not counted as if a person actually committed the avera. So therefore, what the Alshich is actually saying over here is something amazing. That in this pasuk, Rachash Libi Davar Tov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when my heart is astir with good thoughts, then Omer Ani Ma'asai L'Melech, Ribono Shel Olam, it's as if, again, I know in your eyes, the good thought itself is as if what? As if I've actually committed the good deed. Now, let's analyze this a little bit, because this is intriguing. Meaning, why is that? Why is that that suddenly, again, I go and I get credit for good thoughts? So look at number 11. So the Maharal explains very beautifully. Ubiara Maharal, the Ish Yisrael who tov be'etzem. You see, what this Gemara reflects is that the Ribono Shel Olam believes that at our core, we are good. At our core, we are good. V'lachein mikabel schar gam al machshavto hatova. You see, when I have a good thought to go ahead and do something good, that's my default. My default in life is that I'm a good person and I want to do good things. So if I have a good intention to do something, so then the default says, of course I'm going to do it. Of course I'm going to do that good thing. If for some reason I'm precluded from doing so because of extenuating circumstances, however, it doesn't change the fact that my essence, my gestalt, is good. I'm good in my essence. And therefore it says in the Maharal, if I have thought to do an Aveira, I'm not punished for that thought. Why? Ki ein ze ela mikra etzlo. What a beautiful perspective. Because when a Jew thinks about sinning, that's an aberration. That's not the norm. That's not the norm. That is an aberration from the norm. He says, Va'anan sahadi shegamlula hamaniya shirlo lahaya mevatzes zimamo lahara. And even if a person was not precluded from sinning because of extenuating circumstances, the statistical probabilities, that's what? They would not have carried through on their thoughts. So the way the Maharal understands this is that this is not like a hocus pocus idea. This is a statement about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at us. So Ribono Shel Olam says, if I have in mind to do a mitzvah, the Ribono Shel Olam says, I'm going to give you credit for that thought. Why? Because the fact that you have in mind to do good just reinforces your inherent status quo as being a good person. The status quo of a Jew, the default of a Jew, is I'm good. I'm good. I'm a good person. And therefore, again, I have in mind to do something, but I'm precluded from doing so because of extenuating circumstances. I get credit for that positive thought. Thought to do an avera, that's an aberration. That is not the norm. So because that is an aberration, therefore, by definition, I'm only held liable for that if what? If what? If I act. If I do something. But thought about an avera, the Ribono Shel Olam doesn't hold against me because, again, that's just simply an aberration. So really, according to the Gemara, what's happening over here is that this concept of machshava tova, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzarfa lamaisa, that a good thought God counts as a deed, reinforces the idea that at my core I am holy, at my core I am good. You know that there's a big machlokas about the inherent nature of man. In fact, one of the major distinctions between Christianity and Judaism is how you view the inherent nature of man. So Christianity clearly looks at man as inherently evil. Man is bad, and man has to spend his life trying to go ahead and rectify that. Yes?
And also, the thing like this fearless, clear thought is not considered anything. But I think by them, in the confessional, they have to confess
that. Correct. I'm not going to ask you how you know that. But, all right. But, okay. Good. Excellent. It's very true. So the idea over here is, so we hold man is inherently good. Man is inherently good. And the raya for that is, that if I have a thought to do an avera, that's an aberration. That's not me. That's not me. And therefore, I'm only held accountable by God if I actually do something. On the other hand, when I think good thoughts, mitzvah thoughts, that's my norm. That's reinforcing my norm. So actually, I want to build on this a little bit. I spoke about this concept on Shabbos a little bit. So those of you who heard this on Shabbos, we'll take the chazar a little bit. So take a look at number 12. There's an amazing pasuk. There's an amazing pasuk. So the Torah says, "Kisira chamor son acha rovetz tachas masao." Literally, if you see the donkey of your enemy buckling under its load, right, lying under its load, buckling under its load, v'chadalta me'azov lo, and you would refrain from helping him, azov to azovimo, make sure to help. Okay, so a very beautiful pasuk, teaching us many things, teaching us about tzar bali chayim. If you see an animal suffering, you have to do what you can in order to go ahead and help the suffering of the animal. Also, remember, taking it a step further, that chesed is not just something you do for your friends. Chesed is something you have to do for all people. It's easy to help out your friends. They're your friends. They've probably helped you out before. If you need help, you know, they would be there for you. But real chesed is when you help out people, first of all, who you don't know. And real chesed is even when you help out people who, again, you might not even like very much, but they're in need, and therefore I'm going to rise to the occasion. But it's interesting that the Torah uses this lashon of chamor son acha. You know, there's such a strong lashon of the chamor, the donkey of your enemy. Donkey of your enemy. Torah could have just simply said at the end of the day, help a donkey struggling under its load, independent of who it belongs to. So look at the Zohar, number 13. So the Zohar says something amazing. He says, my rovetz. He says, Ela, kisira chamor son acha rovetz, di'ihu lo yocho lemispal al kasfohi chamra d'oraisa. So the Zohar says something amazing. The Zohar says, that chamor son acha doesn't apply to a donkey. Or I should say, it's not just talking about a donkey. He says, the Zohar says that chamor is lashon of chomrius, physicality. And what's going to happen? You're going to find someone, physicality, you're going to find someone who's struggling underneath the burden. So the Zohar says, what kind of burden are we talking about over here? So the Zohar says it's the burden of the Torah. Lo yachel lemispa alei omachus bigalusa. So sometimes you're going to find the Jew who's struggling with the burden of Torah. Torah is just too much, too overwhelming for him or her. V'chadalta me'azov lo, hacha achzi l'kain da'asidin l'mehavi Yisrael b'ducha de'galusa. So the Zohar goes on to say, what the Torah is also telling us is not just about someone's donkey, but about someone. If I see someone struggling spiritually, if I see someone who's struggling with their Judaism, struggling with their Torah, and I might say, you know what? It's not my problem. It's their problem. V'chadalta me'azov lo. You might want to turn away. Torah says, azov to azovimo. Make sure to help the person who is struggling with their spirituality. We can take this one step further. That it's not just about spirituality. You know, there's I quoted this on Shabbos, so for those who were there, I apologize for the repetition. So Rabbi Baruch Brol told me an incredible story, actually on Erev Shabbos. And the story, this is Imam Shemaisa Shahai, a real story. So the story takes place in the 1970s in the Lower East Side. There are a group of teenage boys who had too much free time on their hands. You know, generally, teenage boys are not the greatest incubator for great ideas to begin with, right? And when they have too much free time on their hands, it's even worse. So they decided, it was Rosh Chodesh night, they decided they were going to take out the list of the faculty from their yeshiva, Misifta Teferes Yerushalayim on the Lower East Side, and they were going to prank call all of the Rebbeim at 1 o'clock in the morning. And what they were going to do is they were going to go ahead and ask a simple question. I forgot to say Yale V'Yavo in Mariv. Do I have to repeat Shmona Esrei? Okay, so first of all, never call your rabbi at 1 o'clock in the morning with that question. Hey, so okay, it's a legitimate halachic question, but not at 1 o'clock in the morning. Okay, so one of the boys, young boy by the name of Chaim, they're splitting up the list, and who does he call? Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Hi, is Rabbi Feinstein there? After said, Rabbi Moshe got up at 2 o'clock in the morning for the day. That's when he got up. He learned before Shafnis, he got up. But at 1 o'clock in the morning, he was mamish sleeping. So this boy, teenage boy Chaim, calls up, Rabbi Moshe, I'm so sorry to wake up the Rav. I have an important and urgent shayla. Rabbi Moshe says, what's wrong? So I forgot Yalev Yavo in Mairif. Do I have to repeat Shmona? So Rabbi Moshe said, you have to hold on for a second. I have to wash Netilas and Negel Vasser. I have to say Birchas HaTorah. I just woke up, so I can't converse in Torah with you until I go ahead and rest. So he puts the phone down, washes Netilas Adayim, says Birchas HaTorah, gets back on the phone. Now you should know, just from a halachic perspective, it happens to be an interesting halachic question. As well, because again, Mari that night, Beis Din didn't declare the new month that night, such as according to many, you don't have to repeat. Okay, so Moshe goes through the whole thing with him and gives him the answer to his shayla. Then Moshe says, do me a favor, tomorrow when you're in shir, so ask the boy, what masechta are you learning? The boy says, I'm learning masechta's Gittin. So okay, tomorrow when you go to shir, I want you to ask your Rebbe this question. And Moshe gives him like a major question on the particular topic of Gemara they're learning. So the next day, the boy comes in to shir, raises his hand. The rabbi says, okay, Chaim, what do you want? You need to go to the bathroom? Just go to the bathroom. You can go. Rabbi, no, I have a question. And the boy proceeds to ask this question to Rav Moshe, the question to his rabbi. And the rabbi is blown away by the depth and profundity of this question. It's absolutely amazing. And he's, Chaim, come with me. And he takes Chaim from rabbi to rabbi, shir to shir. Chaim, you gotta tell him the question, And Mamish Chaim is the all-star of the yeshiva. What happens? His rabbi takes him to see the manal, the principal. So the rabbi's walking with Chaim down the hall. The principal sees him and says, Chaim, what did you do now? Right? What did you do now? He says, Rabbi, no, I'm not in trouble. I have a question. He tells the manal the question. The manal says, that is an amazing question. That's the kind of question that the Rav Moshe would ask. That night, the boy calls back to Rav Moshe. And he said, Rabbi, thank you very much. Because for the first time today, my Rabbi looked at me like a good kid. For the first time today, the manal didn't just look at me as a troublemaker. For the first time today in my entire life throughout school, I felt like a someone. Rav Moshe understood that if this teenage kid was calling the Gadol Hadar at 1 o'clock in the morning, you only do stupid stuff like that when you don't feel good about yourself. A person who has a sense of self-worth, a person who knows that I'm important, that I matter, that my life is meaningful, doesn't engage in shtuyot, doesn't engage in silliness. It's only a kid who feels like a nothing that does the actions of a nothing. And Rav Moshe understood in that moment that I have to help to build this child up, because who knows what his Rebbe thinks about him? Who knows what his Manal thinks about him? Who knows what his parents think about him? I'm going to make him feel. I'm going to allow him to feel what it's like to be an all-star. And when he gets that taste of what it means to be an all-star, I have no question that he's going to work to build himself up. Look at the pasuk back in number 12. The Torah says, Kisira chamor son acha rovetz tachas mas. You know what the Torah is telling us? The Torah is telling us, you know, come across your son acha, your enemy. And why is he your enemy? Because he said something nasty to you. He did something mean to you. He did something terrible to you. And you know what? You know what you have to realize? People are good at their core. Which means that if good people do bad things, you know why that is? Because they are rovetz tachas masa'o. Because there's something weighing down on them in life. Because there's something else going on with this person. Because if you believe that people are good at their core, which is what we believe in, and even if we don't really believe it, we have to work on ourselves to actually believe it. Then if I believe that people are good at their core, then when a person does something terrible, when a person does something bad, I have to ask myself, what burden is crushing you? What burden is crushing you? What is it that's going on in your life? What is it that's going on within you? What's in it that's going on in your head, that's going on in your mind, that's going on in your soul, that's making you do these terrible things? And the Torah says, the first reaction is, V'chadalta me'az, I don't want anything to do with you. I don't want anything to do with you. You're my oyev. And the Torah says, Azov ta'azovimo. Sometimes if you could help a person deal with their peckle, if you could help a person deal with the masa, with the great burden that's weighing them down, if you could help a person deal with the things that make them feel like a nothing and make them feel insignificant and allow them to act out, you could help a person, you could help remove that burden, you could help rehabilitate the individual. This is what the Torah is telling us, not just the din ultimately again, not just the din in Tzar Balei Chayim and helping animals, not just the din somebody who's struggling with their Torah, they can't handle the yoke of Torah. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov explains that this is a din in life. That when you come across chamor is chumrius, the physicality. When you come across your enemy, just understand that you know why he's your enemy? Because he did something bad. You know why he did something bad? Because he's rovetz tachas masa'o. Because there's some burden that's crushing down on him. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, azov tazovimo. People are good. People are good. So when good people do bad things, that means because they're being crushed under some burden. Try to help alleviate the burden. Now, it's true. Sometimes you can't alleviate the burden of others. Sometimes that burden is too immense. Sometimes that burden is too great. Sometimes that burden is too overwhelming. But at least you could recognize it. At least when you look at that person, you no longer have to look at him as your enemy. Because at the end of the day, you understand that what? You understand that that individual is good at his or her core. There just must be something else going on in their life that is causing them to do this. And therefore, again, if we bring this full circle, there's still more, but we're going to be out of time. So if we bring this full circle, What this comes back to is something quite beautiful. So go back up now to number one. And according to the Al-Sheikh, Rachash Libi Davartov, Ribono Shel Olam, you know what's absolutely amazing? Is that when I begin to think good things, just good thoughts, so Omer Ani Ma'asai L'melech, ultimately I know you count it, the Machshava Tova, you count it ultimately as a good deed. And that, Ribono Shel Olam, fills me with the greatest confidence. You know why? Not because I need more stickers on my heavenly mitzvah chart. Not because, again, I need more schar. But because it reinforces the fact that you look at me, when you look at me, going back to what we learned last week, you see good. Remember, like we learned last week, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when the color is no longer in the petals, you still smell the scent. Even when everyone else looks at me like a nothing, and even when everyone else looks at me like a failure, even when everyone else looks at me in a negative way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know what I know? You see in my heart, you see in my mind, you see my good thoughts, you see my desire to be something good. And sometimes I can't actualize it for a whole variety of reasons, but I know that when you look at me, all you see is someone who's beautiful. All you see is someone who's good. All you see is someone who's holy. So if we bring this all together, and again, this is only one pasuk. We could spend 5 years on this kapitel, because each of these pesukim has something else. So what we come out with today is two ideas from David HaMelech. Number one, David HaMelech, Rachash Libi David HaMelech, I'm so excited, because the tone of this kapitel is excitement, is happiness and joy. I'm happy for two reasons. And by the way, you know these approaches they work together. I'm happy, number one, because the Torah was translated into 70 languages. Why does that make you? David HaMelech is so easy to please. That's what makes him happy. The Torah was translated into 70 languages? And the answer is yes. Because the Torah was translated into 70 languages. Torah was given in the middle of nowhere. You know what I now understand? That sometimes it takes us, you know, when we're young, we often, and everyone here is young, Baruch Hashem, we often don't know the key to real happiness. And the sad part of life is we squander so many years looking for happiness in all the wrong places. We all want to be happy, and yet we go about it all wrong. This is David HaMelech, already an older man, a seasoned adult, saying, Kadosh Baruch Hu, I finally got it. Because you know what? I've got all the money one could want. I've got all of the covet one could want. I have everything. I have everything in life. And you know what? I'm still not happy. Because I realize now that true happiness comes from the Torah in 70 languages. True happiness comes from Matan Torah in the middle of nowhere. True happiness comes from Shelo Yehi Lipcha Chalak Al HaMakom. True happiness comes about when you realize that I have the ability to have a relationship with Hashem no matter where I am in life, no matter where I am geographically, no matter where I am emotionally, no matter where I am spiritually, wherever I'm holding in life, I have the ability, if I choose, to reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and have a relationship. That's Rachash Libi Davar Tov. I'm so excited, that finally I'm an old man, but I finally understand the secret to life happiness. And number two, you know why else I'm so happy? I'm so happy because Rachash Libi Davar Tov, because I know that when I think good thoughts for you, that's Omer Ani Ma'asai L'melech, you treat it as good deeds, which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that although the rest of the world may sometimes look at me as a sinner, may sometimes look at me as someone who's compromised, someone who's not a tzaddik, someone who's done terrible things, I know at the end of the day, you see my heart, and you see my soul. You see the good I want to do. You see the good person I want to be, and that's what defines me in your eyes. You take my machshavas, tovos, you take my good deeds, and for you, they're like mice and they're like actions. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I could sleep at night knowing that sometimes, even though there might be many out there who don't like me, or many out there who have a low opinion of me, and sometimes I have a low opinion of myself, Rachash Libi Davar Tov, my heart is so filled with joy, because I know how highly, I know how beautifully you think of me. Alright, we'll stop over here. Mirat Shem, we'll continue with Kapitel.